A picture is worth more than a thousand words. That the sight of a police cruiser on fire is irresistible to newspapers around the world.
On the second day of the G20 summit, you couldn't pick up a newspaper, turn on your TV, or listen to a radio report without receiving the image of a Toronto police cruiser in flames. While important economic decisions were being made inside the fenced-off fortress in downtown Toronto, and voices of opposition were shouting in the streets, it was the rioting and violence of a fringe minority that dominated the news that weekend. In interviews with activists, Toronto residents, and working journalists, we take a look at how the media fared during this tumultuous weekend. I spoke with Dylan Vickers, a Toronto college student who participated in some of the demonstrations on the first day of the summit.
Like, I was around all of Toronto yesterday, like south of Bloor Street, and what I witnessed was a lot different than what was kind of portrayed on the television media. The only images I saw were cop cars on fire, this black bloc group, destroying, vandalizing, things like that. There was like a major focus on that and that alone. I saw mostly peaceful protesters. I actually witnessed one man throw a glass bottle at the cops, mm-hmm. and a mob of about 30 peaceful protesters chased this man just because they felt that he was delegitimizing their message a lot. So I felt that the peaceful protesters, people who actually just had a very peaceful tactics, were being like severely unrepresented. I think it was a bit skewed in that sense.
I caught up with Denise Balcazoon, a general reporter for the Toronto Star, as she was trying to find the bike block rally Sunday afternoon.
I thought it was interesting that I saw someone put on Twitter yesterday that Police Chief Bill Blair had criticized Twitter. He, I guess, was sort of dismissive or derisive when he spoke of it, because that's really where I found the best breaking news by far. The Star's blog is also really great. The Globe's blog is really great. But then what makes it into the paper today is so much less than what's actually happening. And of course, pictures of cop cars on fire and guys with black bandanas are dramatic, and that's what's going to make the paper where space is limited.
Pam McNair, a Toronto resident who lives near the film studio turned detention center, was an eyewitness to the black bloc anarchists.
I think that the media coverage has been pathetic. And I was downtown yesterday when the stuff was going on, the demonstrations were going on. Less than 100 of those black bloc guys walked by me on Queen Street, and that's when they were trashing like Starbucks windows and whatnot. Not one cop stopped them. And then the peaceful people, the cops were shoving aside. So I go home and I watch the news, and they're just blowing it like this thing about the city's been taken over by violent protesters. It hasn't been taken over by violent protesters. A lot of really good, peaceful people here that just want a voice, and we're allowed to have a voice. It's part of our rights as Canadians. CBC, I'm appalled. They've turned it into sensationalist journalism, and personally, I don't know if I'm ever going to watch CBC again.
Occupation is a crime. Free Palestine.
At a demonstration against the repression of the G20 protests on Canada Day, I talked with Stefan Christophe, an activist and freelance journalist who was extensively investigated by the Canadian Security Intelligence Service in the lead-up to the summit.
Honestly, at some points, listening to the CBC, I thought that the CBC stood for the Cops Broadcasting Corporation, because there were no voices of dissent. There was no voices of the movements who were on the streets featured. It was cops all the time, everywhere. What we have is a media where generals and police are the order of the day, not people who the media purports to represent.
At the same demonstration on July 1st, Kai Nagata, a CBC video journalist, explained some of the reasons for the recycled images of violence seen on the major news outlets.
I think there was a lot of difficult editorial decisions to be made about which stories to prioritize and which images to prioritize. And so if you look at the coverage across most of the major networks, it was relatively uniform in terms of what we saw over and over, and that was the burning police cars at King and Bay. At the same time, there was a story to be told about what was happening inside the summit, and I feel like some networks did a better job covering the actual policies being passed than other networks. There were also a number of independent journalists, freelancers, most of them working for, I can call them left-wing grassroots publications. Mm-hmm. And what disappoints me as a journalist is to see those people being treated differently from people who have the protection of a large corporation like myself. So no, there were no CBC journalists who were beaten or who were detained arbitrarily, but there were people who didn't have that accreditation or that protection who appear to have been the victims of one-size-fits-all approach by the police. They were lumped in basically with the crowd that they were covering.
I asked interviewees if they were finding any good alternative media outlets covering the events in Toronto.
Look, I've been looking on the CCPA Monitor website, the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives, and Canadian Dimension.
There was amazing work undertaken by the Toronto Media Co-op, and the Media Co-op was visited and used by thousands and thousands across the world during the mobilization against the G20. Video, photos, audio, writing.
I think people should really try and check the news on the internet because there's just space for so much more.
Joey Grijalva reporting for Concordia University News.